We got up from our knees, blinking at each other in surprise. I looked at my watch. It was 11:35 in the evening. At that precise hour, we knew that tomorrow everything was going to be all right. The next morning, promptly at 9 o'clock, Professor B and I were at headquarters. While we were waiting, Professor B whispered to me that he knew the staff well. The head of the department was unrelenting in his attacks on the church. His deputy was much more likely to be lenient. "We are scheduled," he said behind his hand, "to see the department head. Too bad." 9:30 came, and then 10 o'clock. 11. We were both used to long waits in bureaucratic countries, but this was a long delay by any standards. Finally, just before noon, a clerk appeared. "Come this way," he said. Professor B and I walked down a long corridor behind the clerk. We passed the department head's office and kept going. Professor B looked at me and raised both eyebrows hopefully. At last we stopped. The head of the department, the clerk explained, had fallen ill the night before. In his stead, the deputy would hear our case. Professor B threw me a quick glance. 20 minutes later, we were walking out of the office, free men. I yearned to ask the clerk at what hour the department head had fallen ill. To this day, I am certain his answer would have been 11:35 p.m. The encounter with the authorities ended for the time being the possibility of further meetings in Budapest. Professor B arranged a 10-day speaking tour for me in eastern Hungary and found an interpreter to go with me. When I returned, I went to give a report on the trip to Janos and Professor B. Right away I sensed that something was wrong. For one thing, both son and father were at home in the middle of the day, yet neither man let on that all was not as it should be. They insisted that I return the next morning to have breakfast with them before I started for home. The next morning I sensed again this lingering feeling of disaster. As we pushed our chairs back from the table and stood up, Janos drew a small package from his pocket. It was only later, when I learned what news they were secretly carrying, that the full impact of his words became clear. "We have so little way of saying thank you," said Janos. "You risk much coming to our country. We want you to take this to that girl waiting back in Holland." I had told them about Corrie. Inside the box was an antique gold pin set with rubies. They all laughed at the expression on my face. Janos put his arm around his young wife's shoulder. "We're praying for you, Andy, that that answer's going to be yes." I was halfway across Austria on my way home, camping by the roadside in my little tent, when I woke up in the middle of the night with a terrifying nightmare.